Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
He's with us every day talking football here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The professor John Clayton with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Hello, John.
Good. Hey, what a week it's been. Man, amazing.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week, and I think it's going to be an interesting few weeks, to say the very least. So we're just powering our way through, John. Meanwhile, in the NFL, you've got signings happening, nothing involving the Seahawks to this point, but we saw Todd Gurley. He was released, and then boom, he is picked up right away by the Atlanta Falcons on a one-year, $6 million deal, which, you know, we talked about him having issues with the knee, and he's not the player he was, but despite all that, John, rushed for over 800 yards and had 14 touchdowns last year. That's a lot of production. It feels like $6 million is a pretty reasonable price. If I'm a Falcons fan, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I mean, the question is going to be how good is he going to be, because he's got that arthritic knee, but of course they've covered themselves in the fact that they're not overpaying him. You know, again, it's a $14.5 million guy going down to $6 million, and how good he was 2 years ago. I mean, you're talking about he was probably the best back in the game, and now that knee has taken him down. But, you know, they get him at a discount. You know, they let Freeman go, and Freeman, of course, was costing $8 million a year, so they saved some money at running back, which they need because they're tight against the cap. You know, they were able to squeeze in the ability to, get a pass rusher, which they need, and Dante Fowler, which I think they thought they couldn't do. So they came out of that okay. So overall, good move for the Falcons. Bad move, obviously, for the Rams as you look back.
All right, what do you think Gurley does there, John? I mean, what's your feel as far as him going forward? This is, what, his fifth year coming up, sixth maybe? And, I feel like he's still got a lot of gas in the tank.
We just don't know with his knee. He's got the arthritic knee, and you know what it's like with guys with arthritic knees. I mean, you're not going to be able to be as durable. You're going to probably miss more time, which he did last year. But I think that the one thing is that they were so cautious with him that they didn't take advantage of his, remaining ability. But again, he's a running back on decline, and so, what are we going to see? If they can get 80% of what he was a couple years ago, it's a great signing.
John, what's your read on the Clowney situation today?
It wouldn't surprise me if something happens within minutes, hours, or days, because where it comes down to is that you know that they've got to make a move and do something. And I'm not saying it has to be quick, but it probably does, because the options are diminishing. Clowney doesn't have many 4-3 teams to really talk to anymore. Washington's not going to go for him because they're going to draft Chase Allen. Most of the other teams, I mean, Carolina could be a consideration, but they're not going to be a very good team. Maybe there's an outside shot at Philadelphia. And I think what you can see is that, with Fowler getting the $15 million deal, that now that's probably out of the question here for him to get. So he's probably going to have to take a pay cut from last year. So now, if you're Clowney, are you going to be upset to take less than $15 million from Seattle? Or are you going to wait to see if something else breaks? Or are you going to find a 3-4 team where you can be a linebacker? And then, of course, the other thing that's speeding things up is that Everson Griffin told the Minnesota Vikings that he's out of the negotiations. He's not going to go back. And so that tells me that Seattle's talking to Griffin. Any of the other 4-3 teams are talking to Griffin. And if Clowney, if they didn't put a deadline on him, they'll probably move over and get Everson Griffin.
I think we lost Bob, guys. You're going to have to keep the conversation going here for a moment.
Oh, I'm here. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, we lost Bob.
You, John? Yeah.
Oh, you lost Bob. Okay.
Yeah, he's the most important one, John. Let me ask you a couple of Brady questions. So already his jersey is the top seller for Fanatics. And then I didn't know he was going to do a 2-year deal. Tell us about the details of his deal in Tampa.
Yeah, I think most people thought he was going to do a 2-year deal because, maybe he's now realizing, okay, I'm going to play till 45. And so if you do a 2-year deal, that's going to get you to 45 because you'll be 43 this year. I think it's interesting that the thought was that he was offered $30 million, and I don't doubt that he was, but I think what he was looking at is that he wanted to make sure he was guaranteed to finish his career with the Atlanta Falcons. And so it's kind of like the Kirk Cousins deal, where Kirk Cousins could have got $30 million to go to the New York Jets, but instead decided to take $28 million on a 3-year deal to go to Minnesota. So you know, what he did is that everything was locked up. I mean, he gets $25 million, and it's pretty basic. I mean, you know, it's a $10 million base and $15 million on the roster bonus for 2 years, but it's guaranteed. There's a no-trade clause in there. There's a no-franchise clause in there. So if he does want to play another year or so after the 2 years, he can do it. But apparently he wanted the guarantees and make sure that nothing happens to him, and maybe that's a little bit of the mistrust of what he was thinking was going on in his latter days with New England.
Did we lose Jim, too?
Well, John, you think he can play for another year after his two-year contract is up?
I think right now it's like to forecast anything past 45 is crazy. You know, he's like, but he could. I mean, you never know, but I think it depends on how well he fits in with Tampa Bay and how well he does with Bruce Arians in that offense. But at least you take it 2 years at a time, but at least he's going to get 2 years.
Hey, John, what's going on in terms of a landing spot for Everson Griffin? We saw that he sent out the post on Instagram basically saying goodbye. It's been great. Thanks so much, Minnesota. Where do you think the landing spot is for him?
Well, I mean, my guess is if Seattle hasn't put that deadline on Clowney, they probably need to because they need to find out. You would prefer to have Clowney. He's younger. He fits in with your team. But if he has to take less than the $15.3 million that he made last year, he might be upset about that. So, but again, it's like the offer's got to be there because certainly they can get Everson Griffin for much less, probably in the $8 million range. And so my guess would be that he's talking to Seattle and something could happen very quick. I remember the other day, you know, I just got done at the 2 o'clock segment, and 5 minutes after it happened, Bruce Irvin got his deal done with Seattle. So wouldn't surprise me that something can happen tonight, could happen tomorrow.
Hey, John, XFL canceling the rest of the season, and that opens the door for NFL signings. Now, I know you know we all haven't, you know, followed it that closely or really even got enough of a look at some of the players, but just off the top of your head, there's, what, 8 teams? Right, and how many players? How many players do you think around per team are going to get signed on by the NFL?
I'd say probably between 40 and 45, if not more, because that was kind of the number last year once the AAF closed, and of course it was a little bit slow because they wouldn't let the guys out of the contract for some times. But once that closed, and remember, a lot of these guys were in the AAF. And they'd also been in the National Football League. So I would have to think that there's probably going to be 36, if not more, that will get quick deals.
John, what do you make of Darius Slay? He went on a show in Detroit, the Mitch Albom show, and then I heard him this morning with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman and basically trashing on his former slob of a coach there in Detroit, Matt Patricia. He's traded to the Eagles. Well, I don't even know what to make of the whole situation. A good trade for the Eagles and losing another good player from Detroit.
Yeah, it's a great trade for the Eagles because here you get one of the best man-to-man cover guys in the league, and you get him for only a third and a fifth round choice. And that's been kind of the guy that they've been looking for some time because he really, and of course, he gets back together with Jim Schwartz, who was there in Detroit when he was drafted. So that's a good fit. From the standpoint of Detroit, it's another bad story involving Patricia. And I'm sure the four Seahawks from last year that were on the Detroit roster were all sitting there laughing. And whether it's DeAndre Diggs or Luke Wilson or whether it's Ziggy Ansah, because you know they've seen the problems. And of course, if you're Matt Patricia, how can you go to your Pro Bowl cornerback and say just because he was working out with Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson that you're not an elite cornerback? That's insulting. And of course, it was so insulting is that the minute he said that, the relationship was pretty well dead between Slay and Patricia. But that's the idea. It's like, hey, if you're trying to be Bill Belichick and you want to make some negative comments, hey, have some wins to back it up. You know, Belichick wasn't the nicest guy when he was first with the Cleveland Browns, and he chased away all the leaders in the locker room and all that stuff. But then he's learned since then, you need leadership in the locker room, you need veteran players, and so you have to have that. Well, apparently Matt Patricia doesn't believe in that.
If you guys have questions for the professor, just text them into 710-710. That's the text line. We'll try to get to your questions if we have time left in the segment. Meanwhile, one guy we haven't brought up, John, is Emmanuel Sanders, who I know is older, is a wide receiver, but we saw him really look productive with that San Francisco 49er team. Where do you expect him to end up?
Hard to tell. I mean, what's happening right now, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in Dallas. I mean, if the numbers come down, he could stay in San Francisco. But if you really look at all the wide receivers, and there's about six or seven wide receivers in the top group, and only two that have really moved, you know, what's happened is that, you know, everybody's looking at the draft and realizing that, hey, why should I pay $11 million for a veteran wide receiver when you can go and, you know, get one of the 25 guys who are rated in with third round picks or better, because it's such a good receiver draft. And so I think that's holding everything up. Now, at some point, it's going to break and some of these guys are going to sign. But my guess is that the market right now probably isn't $11 or $12 million for these guys. And so the receivers are holding out, but I don't know if they're going to gain anything.
The fact that Clowney hasn't been signed, does that necessarily mean that the, you know, $20, $21 million opportunities have gone by? Wouldn't he be signed by now, or is this is indicating that it's going to be something for...
It indicates totally that, you know, I mean, and right now, and I hate to say this for Clowney, is that it probably indicates that it's now gone past the $15 million mark. Because think about Dan Quinn. You know, Dan Quinn, wow. I'm sure, watched Clowney and what he did in a similar defense that he runs with the Falcons that he ran back here in Seattle. Okay, so now who is a better fit? Dante Fowler, who's, you know, been kind of an underachiever most of his career, or Clowney, who's, you know, certainly one of the most talented edge rushers in football? Well, guess what? Who did they sign? They signed Fowler, and so at $15 million. So my guess right now is that Clowney's going to have to struggle to get even close to what he made last year at 15.3 as a franchise player.
Yeah, so John, I heard you this morning say, I mean, you even mentioned 12 or 13 million. I can't believe he would come down that much, but I guess we're to that point. Is it just injury concerns and low sack totals, or what is it basically?
A combination of everything. Low sack totals because he's never been a double-digit sack guy. That took him out of the $20 million range. And then, you know, the other, because, I mean, you look at Vic Beasley and some of the other guys, they ended up getting 12. I mean, certainly I think he's going to do a little bit better than that, but I think where it stands right now, with very few teams left in a 4-3 defense to bid for him, he's probably down, you know, in the 14 range, if not a little bit lower. It's amazing to think because, I mean, we've all watched how good this guy is. We've all watched how dedicated he is to play with a surgery that he needed on his core, and he held back because he wanted to do this for his teammates to help them go. But then the other problem is, okay, if you have an injury history like he has, you're probably going to want to have him, you know, take a physical and see where he is. Problem is, that's very difficult to do right now because of the coronavirus, because you can't have him fly into your city and go to your facility and visit with the doctor. So at this stage, I think right now the market is dried up on him. It's sad, bad timing, everything else, but he's now paying a bad price.
John, the 206 wants to know if the Seahawks don't get Clowney or Griffin, what's going to happen? What do they do? That's from Jerome.
Well, the next thing you start to look at, see what trade possibilities are there. And you got Matthew Judon there with the Baltimore Ravens. He would be one. You have to wait out Jacksonville, who right now is reluctant to trade Unique Ndakwe, you know, because they want to keep him on the team, even though he wants out of there. And you can see he's constantly putting things on Instagram to indicate how much he doesn't want to be a Jaguar. The most recent one is, you know, putting a picture of a Philadelphia Eagle Reggie White in uniform, trying to say, hey, the Eagles are after me. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not what Ndakwe wants. He wants out of there, but the Jags aren't letting him out of there. But I have to think if things dry up right now, it's going to probably have to be, you know, trying to do a tag and trade.
Hey, John, you know, it's funny. We used to talk to Bruce Irvin, and he was like, hey, I don't care about anything but sacks. And he remember the year he had two pick sixes, which for me, like a linebacker, it's a dream to have pick sixes, but... never even sniffed one, by the way. but yeah. I was such a terrible run back guy, my God. But yeah, I mean, he was right. I mean, Irvin was right, you know, that the sacks are what gets you paid, man. And I just think it's interesting that he knew that. Do we know anything? The 206 or 360 actually was asking if we know any details of his signing his contract.
No, nope, not yet. My guess is it's probably around the $4 to $5 million mark on a 1 year deal. So, but we don't know that number. It hasn't come through yet.
John, we were talking earlier about Justin Britt. Do you think he's going to be a cap casualty?
I do now, yeah. I mean, because look what happened the other day, and it's sad for Justin because, again, here's a guy coming back from an ACL that's been so dedicated, has been such a good leader, all those different things, but he's making $9 million a year. All right, so then you look at the big picture, is that, okay, they get B.J. Finney, who can be a center or a guard. You know, they have Ethan Posick, who can be a center or a guard, but he's probably going to be a better center. Then you also have, you know, Philip Haynes, a cornerback. They brought back on a restricted tag Joey Hunt. You know, Jordan Roos has now worked a little bit at the center position. So now you have all these options there, and he's making the $9 million a year contract, and you don't know where he's going to be, you know, physically or playing-wise at the end, you know, when he comes back. So I think right now there's a great chance he's going to be a cap casualty. I didn't think that before. I thought it had been better just to wait till training camp because they didn't need the cap room. But unfortunately, he's in a bad place right now.
Hey, John, we didn't. I don't think we hit this with you yesterday when we were talking about Tom Brady, but we had the report out there that wherever he was going to go, obviously it was Tampa Bay, he was wanting that team to bring in Antonio Brown. And I don't know, it feels weird that he would. I mean, obviously he's still a talented receiver, but after everything everybody has seen from him, the idea that a team would be willing to bring him in seems far-fetched at best. How much truth is there to that story that he wanted Antonio Brown signed wherever he landed?
He did, but sometimes you want to put an order in for dinner and they run out of the food that you want and you have to take something else. And so there's no chance that Antonio Brown's going to go there. Because think about if you're Bruce Arians, I mean, you know him from being back in Pittsburgh. You know, there were a little bit of a relationship, but again, he drives you crazy. But then the other part is if you bring in Antonio Brown, and you've got the best wide receiver duo in football, Mike Evans, and you also have Cedric Godwin. How many passes do you think are going to go to Antonio Brown? And if they don't go to him, you know he's going to be a problem because he's seen it before. So, no, pretty much he asked, and he was rejected.
253 asking a great question, John. I told him I would ask you, how many rolls of toilet paper in the Clayton household?
Well, it was great, and I'll tell you a story because I went up to the QSC in Newcastle yesterday, and they recognized me there. So one of the managers says, "Hey, John, we got toilet paper for you because we just got a big shipment in." And so I was down to about maybe six rolls, and so and of course what they do is they allow you to get one packet, but I got a packet of 60, so I've got 66 right now.
Holy smokes! Well, we know
a
whose house to raid.
60.
Packages of 60, yeah.
Jeez.
That's what being the professor gets you.
It's great to see
extra
that,
toilet paper.
You know, people listen on the show, and it's like, oh, I got a problem here. I don't know where I can get toilet paper. So as soon as I walked into the QFC, you know, the manager says, "Hey, John, guess what? We just got a big shipment in."
Yeah. Oh, my.
Go ahead, Jim.
That's very nice there, Professor. I'll have to find out from my wife how many we have here. I don't think we're in a shortage situation yet. I wanted to ask you about Andrew Whitworth. It seemed like his play had been falling off from indications that we got from you, and yet he's 38 years old, and somehow he scored a three-year contract for $30 million with the Rams. Why did they do that?
Well, because they don't have much else. I mean, remember, they took Joe Noteboom in the draft last year, and they thought maybe he can develop into the left tackle, but then he suffered a bad injury, and so now you probably just want to keep him at guard, you know, coming off about to get the ACL. And so Noteboom's not ready, and you know they don't have a first-round pick, so they only have 10 picks over the next 2 years, so they have a limited ability to get a tackle out of the draft. So out of necessity and the fact that he's a great leader, I mean, one of the problems that he had was that, they had the holding rule, particularly if you're doing, you know, on the backside, if you make a grab and you don't let go, and he's the worst in the league at doing that. I mean, he'll take that if you're running to the backside. I mean, he'll get that a little bit extra hands on you. And, you know, he was the poster child of that rule. And so consequently, I think it affected his play. But this guy's a great leader. I'm happy for him because he's one of my favorite guys in the league. But they had to do something because, hey, they've lost about seven key guys on defense. You know, they had to cut Todd Gurley, and they may have to trade Brandon Cook. So it's like, things are falling apart there, but at least they get a good guy, a good contract.
John, the 253 wants to know, where do you expect Brandon Cooks to be traded to?
Hard to tell. I mean, two places could come to mind here. You know, one would be Philadelphia because they have a desperate need for wide receivers. They have about the worst group in football. Indianapolis could be another team because, again, you put a speed guy on the other side of T.Y. Hilton, so I can see that being a possibility. So I think those two teams would be leading the pack. You know, Baltimore could be a consideration because they're still void at the wide receiver spot too.
All right, John, at 5:30 we've got Bill Barnwell coming on, and I have the feeling he's not going to have great things to say about the offensive lineman that the Seahawks have acquired, Ogwubuhi. I'm saying that wrong. And then also Shell and Finney. But what have you heard about the signings the Seahawks made?
Again, it's like they can be criticized, but these are the guys that they wanted. And they were able to get two guys who can potentially start, you know, getting Finney and also, you know, getting Shell, in the sense that they get these two guys at roughly like $300,000 more than what George Fant was able to get with the New York Jets. So it's kind of a two-for-one, but it's also a scheme fit because, Finney's 318 pounds and tall. You got a 6'5", 232-pound guy in Shell who can really power block on the run. May not be great at the in blocking as far as the pass, but then none of the right tackles, including Jermaine Fetty, were really good against the pass. So it's with the pass rush. So, no, I think it's a scheme fit. And then, of course, you know, Cedric is one that you can fill if he makes the team. Now, again, there's no guarantee he's going to make the team, but he can come in and be a backup swing tackle. He can also maybe play a little bit of tight end, filling the George Fant role. Just a little bit more than what Fant ended up getting, they get three guys.
I'm seeing on the Internet it's Ogwubuhi.
Ogwubuhi, yes.
Yeah. Hey, John, I found a couple of Huskies I'm feeling sorry for. Desmond Trufant and Danny Shelton, both signing with the Lions. Why in the world did they do that, John?
Well, in the case of Shelton, it was to get a job because the defensive tackle market was drying up pretty fast, and so he grabbed a two-year, $8 million deal, and at least he knows the system. As far as Trufant, is 2 years, $21 million, and he probably didn't have any offers that might have been close to that. And so I think for Trufant, he grabbed for the money, where in the case of Shelton, he grabbed for the job.
John, we appreciate it. Good stuff. You doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 to 9.
All right. Well, we'll have a great time this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. There's the professor, John Clayton, who's with us every single day at 4 o'clock. I did appreciate your attempt to say that name, Dave. That's not an easy one.
Yeah. How about Clayton with his 66 rolls? Does everybody know? You guys all know how many you got in your house? You got a count?
No, I don't know. I like the 425, though, saying I was at that QFC last night and there wasn't any.
Well, you know where they went.
Yeah, the professor got all
Clayton's
of them.
House. Jeez. All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. It is Friday, which means it's story time with Dave Wyman. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
As I was limping over there to beat him.
If you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then like I tried to do to Terry Obie that cut me into the mud, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty.
that soundbite of you limping over to beat him will always make me laugh. That it will always be funny to me, Dave.
Well, and the Terry Obie the music story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the Terry Obie part of it. I like Terry Obie. He was in camp here. He's an Oregon guy. He's the sweetest, nicest guy, you know. But he cut me one time, on the outside part of a play. And so as I came down, I landed on top of him. And I must admit, I did push his face mask into the mud as hard as I could. And because when he cut me, you know, that put a damper on the relationship. That was not cool. But I probably told this story before, but Richard Dent, remember him? I mean, I think he's in the top
Chicago
20
Bears.
All-time sacks. Yeah, he's standing on the sidelines with those big capes that they would wear in cold weather. He rips off the cape, runs out, and knocks the crap out of me as I'm getting up off of the pile where I have Terry Obie's face mask into the mud, and knocks me down. And then he runs back off, and I'm looking at the ref going, is that not a penalty? Can you just come off the sidelines and knock somebody down? Because that's what he did. But anyway, I felt like I kind of deserved it.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, your temper can get the best of you in a situation like that. But I'm glad to know think Obi's a good guy.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, like I think somebody was criticizing the guys punching each other in the face mask. And why would you hit somebody, you know, in a face mask or a helmet? You know, that's hard plastic. All you're going to do is break your hand. I'm like, well, you're not exactly thinking rationally. Okay, so, you get angry out on the field. And I always played angry, so... Yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Keith Butler, a mentor of Dave Wyman, will join us. He's part of the is he the defensive coordinator for the Steelers, or he's just part of the defensive staff?
He is the defensive coordinator, and I think he's been in that position for about 5 years. And if you look at what they've done there defensively, my gosh. I mean, he's coaching those guys up. They've obviously got some talent, but the younger Watt player kid, is it JT? What's
TJ.
The young Watts? TJ, thank you.
TJ?
Yeah, he was all pro as a rookie. So, you know, and then they have that Bush kid that they got from Michigan. You know, they've got that Stephon Tuitt. Yeah, Devin Bush, and on the other side, they franchised Bud Dupree, and I know that they've been second and third or first in the last 3 or 4 years as far as sack totals go. So they don't have a problem with sacks there, and he does a good job, you know, as far as bringing guys off the edge and mixing it up. But when I came to Seattle, he was the guy that was like a mentor to me. And the first thing he said to me, and I don't even remember when it was, but I got drafted in the second round. He also was a second-round draft choice, and he had played there, I think, since the beginning. You know, when we ran into him in Pittsburgh, I was with Rabel, and, you know, me and Keith were, you know, texting, and, hey, I want to get together and see you. And so I walked down there, and Rabel and I ran into him, and I couldn't get a damn word in edgewise. Rabel was just, you know, peppering him with questions. What about this and that? But, you know, their wives knew each other, and, you know, they were on the same team for a long time. So it was really cool to run into him. But when I was drafted here in the second round, Keith comes up to me, and I always give him a hard time. I call him Hillbilly because he's still got this heavy Tennessee accent. But he comes up, and he only called me Boy my entire rookie year. He would not call me Dave, Wyman, Y-Monster, whatever they had for me. He only called me Boy my entire rookie year. And then when I came back my second year, he started calling me my nickname, you know, Y-Monster or whatever. But, he goes, Boy, you were drafted to replace me, so you might as well learn this game. I want you to stand next to me at practice and during games. And I was like, wow. And so even times where I didn't go and stand to him, he would come over and grab me and be like, Boy, get over here. I'm going to teach you something. So, I mean, we'd stand there and watch things. I mean, he taught me pro football. He taught me things that, like, you know, there are plays that I made that I always would think of him. After I would make it, you know, you talk about taking on blocks, sometimes slipping the block, going backside, setting the guy up, and all of those things. And he was just a great mentor. So really, really good guy. And, you know, I said yesterday, Bobby passed his tackling record. It was actually Eugene Robinson's record that just got passed. But now Bobby's number one with 1,073. Eugene Robinson at 984 is number two. KJ Wright just passed Keith Butler and is now third with 848. So I think that Keith has something like 843 or something like that. But guy made a lot of tackles here in Seattle.
Well, yeah, he was a heck of a player, Dave, and I remember watching you both. And it sure says a lot about him to take you under his wing when it seems to me in the NFL you're probably pretty concerned about younger players coming in and taking your job, and yet he could see that he wanted to do it the right way. And I've never met him, but I have a lot of respect for a guy like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you know, just go ahead, Bob. You got something there.
Well, I'm just curious if you ever experienced anybody else like that, even just overhearing another veteran speak to a rookie that way, because it feels like, you know, in these days we've heard about guys who are the other way, like, you know, some of these quarterbacks saying, hey, it's not my job to teach this guy, it's, you know, that's on the coaches, and they really have no interest in helping the guy that might replace them. How common is that?
Yeah, not very common. And look, I think the guys that do that, they're coaches. You know, Moyer was that way. I mean, he went right into snoring on the field on the 40-yard line when he got knocked out. And he had a serious, you know, neck problem. But he became a coach. And so, by the way, when Moyer was snoring on the field, I didn't scream and cry and, you know, wave my arms like, come get this guy or anything like everybody does now. I mean, somebody falls down and cuts their head open and everybody freaks out, you know, and has to have a prayer circle and everything to get playing again. My God.
Are you Moyer talking about that basketball game we watched?
Yeah, the basketball game. My gosh. I mean, it was sweet that the guy was concerned about the other guy. But, I mean, the crying and everything. Come on, man. He fell and, you know, hit his head. He'll be fine. So anyway, yeah, Moyer was kind of a natural type of coach, and, you know, in that way, he's not coaching now. Well, he thinks he is. But, yeah, Keith Butler, I mean, you just always knew he was going to be that. But he had here's the thing about Keith. He had this big, huge beard, first of all. Then he had this wrist that he couldn't bend backward. It would only go, like, his hand would only move down, but he couldn't move it up. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And here I'm a rookie, you know, and I haven't had all these things. Now I've got some of these things, like a finger, two fingers that don't work properly. And, you know, today I was trying to do some dumbbell lifts down in my little workout room, and the cracking was distracting in my elbows and shoulder and everything. So, you know, I'm looking at Keith going, oh my God, he's got this wrist. And then the other thing that he had, he got his front teeth knocked out at some point. And so, and he's kind of the guy who I always wore a mouthpiece up until I became a pro football player, and I didn't wear one anymore because you got to talk too much, and I just hated taking it in and out. Plus, it just didn't bother me. But he got his teeth knocked out, so he had them replaced with these two silver things, is all I can call them. They're not teeth. They were not teeth, but they were like these silver things in the middle, and he always kind of kept his lip down and didn't smile a whole lot, but he had these two teeth and I'm like, you are a hillbilly. Why don't you go to the dentist, man? And he's like, why would I do that? I'm waiting until my damn NFL career's over, and then I'll go get, and sure enough, I, you know, saw him last fall, and he's got two nice shiny teeth there, so... Yeah, but I remember looking at that guy going, man, I'm never going to look like that. I'm never going to be that guy. And then this is a little bit too long of a story, but I'll tell you a quick version. I had a teammate, Eric Thomas in Denver, who was the same age as me, and we had run track together. And I think I beat him in the 100 and the 200. And so he's telling this whole story to all the young guys about, this big white dude that was, you know, doing this and that. And they're like, wow, I wonder whatever happened to him. And then he points over to me and he goes, yeah, he's sitting right over there. Well, these guys come over. They're the young guys. And they're looking at me. I'm Keith Butler. I had like a beard. It was my last year in the league. I had ice packs everywhere. I could barely run. And and it was just, I was Keith Butler. So, you know, it happens to everybody. I mean, you become this old man, and when you're young, you look at that guy and go, holy smokes, I'm never going to become him. And I did.
You became him, and he's going to join us at 5 o'clock. Looking forward to that conversation. Good stuff from Dave Wyman coming up. Darius Slay may be Jim Moore's favorite player in the league now. We'll tell you why when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Losing a team meeting. He's showing plays of me, getting caught on in practice, which is cool, which is no problem. You know, just correct me as a player, help me get better, go about my day. But he added a little more fuel to it, and he had posted a picture off my Instagram into the team meeting room and told me to stop sucking this man private. So I said, you know, I'm like, what? Where I'm from, you know, people just don't say that to folks and be like, you know, cool with it. You know, I got to be like somebody you don't like. So I took it offensively.
That's Darius Slay talking about working with head coach Matt Patricia, one of the favorites of Jim Moore. And sounds like it's a welcome relief to be out of Detroit and I don't know how long Patricia's going to be there, man. If that's how he's dealing with his players, he's not going to engender any loyalty from anybody. And I also heard another cut from him talking about, you know, why are you working out with you know, Richard Sherman and these other guys? You're not elite. They're elite. It just, I don't know if that's his motivational tactic or whatever, but it seems like a failed one.
Yeah, I haven't liked the guy ever since he called out a reporter for slouching in his seat at a press conference. Now, if this was a guy that looked all respectable and everything, wearing a suit and tie and was well-groomed, and he said that to the reporter, then I'd go, well, okay. But this guy's a slob. And he's sitting there giving the reporter a hard time. Now he's giving his players a hard time. And he thinks he's like Bill Belichick, you know, recometh or something. And I'm going, the guy hasn't proven anything yet. He won 6 games there in Detroit and then 3 this last year. And so I don't know where he comes off being, you know, a big tough guy. So anyway, yeah, I guess you guys know how I feel about Matt Patricia. Also, you know what else I'll say about him? Is that you need to, you know how, Dave, I was always losing money betting against Brady and how stupid that was. You know how you get it all back? By betting against Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions next year.
Yeah, I get it that he's a slob and an idiot and you don't coach that way. I just think it's funny that, you know, reporters have been crappy to coaches and players for forever, ever since there's been media around the NFL. And what really steams Jim's bean is when the coach actually turns the table on the idiot media guy. And that's what gets you fired up.
This is Andrew.
Andrew, it's Bill.
Bill. Hey, honey, do we have any bills?
Bill Belichick.
Coach Belichick, that's an honor to talk to you. I always had our number in my playing days, but certainly a great coach. One of the best of all time.
Yeah, I know.
They're sorry about Tom leaving. Or maybe not sorry.
We need to make this quick. The feds might be listening.
You know what? That's a very good point. That's a very good point, Coach. It could be tampering. This could be considered tampering. So it might be against the rules.
That's never stopped me before.
That's Frank Caliendo and Joey Molinaro doing a spoof video of Bill Belichick calling Andrew Luck. I'm not sure which one was doing Andrew Luck, but that was really good.
I got to say, whoever was doing Andrew Luck, that was phenomenal.
That was the Joey Molinaro.
Just like him. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I think he was on a rotary phone, too.
You tip off, but you ain't blowing nobody's house down this way. I disagree with you, and I'll disagree when we get back from commercial, and we'll elaborate on why. You can stick out your chest all you want to, acting like you're right, but you ain't right, Marcus Spears, and I'll deal with you in a second, swag goo.
ESPN put out a montage of Stephen A. Smith yelling at a guest together using the Snapchat baby filter. So he's just as obnoxious as a baby as he is an adult.
So is that a real deal? Like they could get us three on video and you put a baby filter? That can't
Taylor
be.
Taylor did that to you guys last year. You're just
yeah,
not
but
on Twitter.
The voice too?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a picture though.
No, he did the voice with Tom and Bob arguing, right, Bob?
Yep.
Oh, you're
yep.
Kidding.
It was. It was pretty entertaining. Yeah. But I guess I like Stephen A. Smith better in that filter than I do in real life. So if they could just keep that going, it'd be better for everybody.
Yeah, it's amusing. I never get tired of hearing the little kid voice, and however you do that on Snapchat, I have no idea. But yeah, it makes it more entertaining than to hear the usual Stephen A. stuff.
Who's the guy he's arguing with? Is it Marcus Spears?
I believe so. It was hard to tell from the little
picture. Yeah, I think so.
Because at one point he says, you can huff and you can puff, but you ain't blowing this house down. And it was all in the baby, voice. And I thought it was phenomenal. Like, I could watch Stephen A. Smith all day that way.
Yeah, he's telling him, you could pump your chest out like you're right, but you ain't. Oh, so he's an obnoxious adult and an obnoxious infant as well.
Yeah.
So, Jim, did you say that Patricia thinks he's Bill Belichick recometh? Is that a word?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I couldn't think of the right word to say there, and so yeah, that I came up with recometh.
How dare he criticize
Were you looking
a media
for
guy?
Jim?
Well, one of my fellow brothers, writers, whatever. Was that guy a writer? What was he? That he told to sit up and
You mean back in Detroit, that press conference? Yeah, I just got no use for the guy. I just hope he fails miserably, and I can't wait till he's fired. I don't really feel that way about a lot of people, but I do about him. I don't even know him. This is just from afar, just hatred from afar.
Who has a better year? Is it going to be him, or is it going to be Tom Brady in Tampa Bay? Patricia or Brady?
Brady.
Come on, Jim.
I think Tom Brady will have a better year than Matt Patricia. But I think Bill Belichick is going to have a better record no matter who his quarterback is in New England than Tampa Bay will with Brady at quarterback.
Yeah, but I just wanted to gauge your bias against an old quarterback versus your hate of Matt Patricia and see who wins.
It's a tight battle, Bob, but I'm going to take Brady over that slob in Detroit.
Okay.
Well, right. You know, and I'll tell you what, everything we're hearing from, you know, players is that he's doing a terrible job there, and he's not treating guys the way that you treat them these days, and then, you know, just smashing each other in practice and just a bunch of bad things going on with him. So I think he's going to play himself out of that job.
Coming up, former Seahawks linebacker, current Steelers defensive coordinator, and mentor to the young Dave Wyman, Keith Butler, will join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.